You're now locked in to HBCU Pulse. We're the number one outlet for HBCU life, talking about everything that's important to our culture. From on-campus issues to politics and what's trending on the yard. We always keep that same energy. Don't touch that dial. You're listening to HBCU Pulse Radio.
What's going on, everybody? This is Randall Barnes, the founder of HBCU Pulse and the host of HBCU Pulse Radio, in the building for another special edition of the show on today. Well, listen, we have another heavy hitter interview for you with a dynamic alumni making it happen out here in the world. And this time, we're talking to an Oscar-nominated young HBCU graduate just starting his career out of North Carolina A&T. Mr. Jordan Brown, who worked as a post-production assistant for the movie The Creator, which was nominated for Best Sound and Visual Effects at the 96th Academy Awards earlier this month. Who's doing it like Jordan? Jordan is literally Magic Johnson on the Lakers, rookie year, winning the championship and the finals MVP. That's how I look at it. He's doing big things. He's making it happen. And in the interview, we talked about a lot of amazing things. We talked about why he chose North Carolina A&T as his HBCU. We also talked about the fact that he was a part of the COVID era of HBCU life. He saw a year and a half of what life was like on an HBCU yard before COVID. Then he experienced life after COVID, and we compared and contrasted those experiences. We also talked about his time working on The Creator as a post-production assistant, and he sort of feels a way about it. Like, he loves the experience of the movie being nominated for two Oscars, but he doesn't feel as if he was a part of it. So listen, in an impromptu fashion, I had to make sure I motivated my fellow young HBCU alumnus and let him know, brother, you like that. Oscar nominated, two-time Oscar nominated. You worked on that film. You opening doors for yourself. So I had to let him know what was up and say, listen, you're doing amazing things. We're proud of you. We want him to keep going, keep grinding, keep making it happen. And this interview, y'all are going to love it. Listen, if you're listening on SiriusXM channel 142 HBCU, I appreciate you. But to hear the full interview, you need to go to YouTube, type in HBCU Pulse, see the full video interview. Got a haircut, making it happen, beard looking right. But also, you can go to your favorite podcast outlet, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcast, type in HBCU Pulse Radio, and you'll be able to hear the full version of this interview. But for the SiriusXM family, we got some nice stuff for you. So make sure to stay tuned wherever you're listening. And we have Jordan Brown, North Carolina A&T alumnus, who worked on the two-time Oscar-nominated movie, The Creator. You're listening to HBCU Pulse Radio.
From the shade room to your news feed, we brag different. You're locked into HBCU Pulse, now trending worldwide.
What's going on, everybody? This is Randall Barnes, the founder of HBCU Pulse and the host of HBCU Pulse Radio, in the building with a very special interview. We got North Carolina A&T in the building. We got Oscar-nominated HBCU graduates in the building. We got Mr. Jordan Brown in the building. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Yeah, that Oscar-nominated, it's still crazy because it's very crazy to me still, because every time someone says it, I'm like, yeah, I worked on a team that was nominated for it. But everybody says, no, you're nominated as well. Celebrate it. I'm like, okay, you win. So I'm still trying to get used to that, but I'm very glad to be here. Very glad to be here. I love everything that y'all do.
I appreciate it. And I'm just very proud of you. We're talking about it just off mic, man, about all the things that you're doing, all the things you're making happen. So let's really just talk about that before we get into just the crux of the interview, right? So how does it feel? So you said that you're still trying to process that you're an Oscar-nominated HBCU graduate that worked on this Oscar-nominated project that was nominated for two Oscars, right? So how have you been processing that, and how was it on Oscars night as you were waiting to see what the result was?
First off, how was the nomination at all? I was just like, I was very excited for the team because I've seen them work very hard on it, like a lot of Saturdays, a lot of Sundays, a lot of no days off, a lot of like eating Thanksgiving, but going right back to the work and working on the project and all that stuff. And so it was nice to see that all that hard work paid off for them. And also it motivated me and inspired me, because it was always a dream of mine to make movies and to be in this film industry, and to know that not only that I'm in it now, but that I'm also working with amazing, talented people that have been doing this for decades and just love it just as much as me. It was very nice to see. And Oscar night, I'm not going to lie, I knew it wasn't going to win. We were going against two heavy hitters. Oppenheimer, when you're going against Oppenheimer, you got to just pick your roses and just accept it and just clap. But just to see the movie still there and just to be nominated and with amazing movies, especially because 2023, in my opinion, was an amazing year for movies. I think it showed the importance of original movies and all that stuff. And so just to be among those, like Oppenheimer, Barbie, Poor Things, American Fiction, all of those movies, Past Lives, like all of those, it really put a smile on my face. It showed me that hard work is paying off. And to just accept it, because it will be back. It will be more on the way.
Definitely. And I still think that although the creator didn't win the awards in the two categories, being nominated for Best Sound and Visual Effects is still amazing. And that's still an Oscar-nominated movie. I think that's the part we gotta really actualize. That is an Oscar-nominated movie. So that's still dope. Like when they write shirt your name on the bio, Oscar nominated. Like, you know what I'm saying? I put Oscar nominated in the front. So that's how it works. I don't make the rules. I don't make the rules. That's how it works.
I am crying. Give it to my mama. If compared to my mom and like my hometown church and A&T, that's what they're going to do. So at this point, I'm just going to accept it and just give it to them.
Hey, listen, at this point, your mom is Oscar nominated. Mom, like, you know what I'm saying? A&T's Oscar nominated, had an Oscar nominated student. Listen, you know how I go. Okay.
That's literally, yes. Thank you for saying that, because that's what it's going to be.
Hey, listen, at this point, it's Oscar nominated HBCU Pulse, because I got you on here. You know what I'm saying? I'm Oscar nominated too. I'm special too. You know what I'm
saying? You're in the room.
Listen.
You're in the room.
Listen, we love it. We love it. So let's start with just your A&T experience. Speaking of A&T, because you said that you wanted to work in film and work in movies, and you chose North Carolina A&T as your HBCU. So what made you choose A&T as your HBCU?
Oh my gosh, that's a perfect question. I actually had a counselor. Her name was Marcelle Grant. I love her. I still talk to her to this day. And she was very adamant about showing us different colleges and different universities when I was a senior in high school. And I went to all of them except for A&T. I'm from Charleston, South Carolina. So it was a 4-hour drive. So it was a little bit of a troop. And so I didn't go because I had to go to work. And I remember she caught me, like literally when they just came back from the school. And she looked at me and she was just like, "You want to go into movies and TV, right?" And I was like, "Yeah." And she was just like, "Look up A&T." And I remember my first time, I was just like, I don't know. I don't know what she's talking about. But then I actually did my research and I was like, okay, I see what they're doing. I looked at the alums that graduated from A&T. I saw Terrence J went there and all that stuff. So I was like, oh, so it's possible. So it's attainable. They have some sort of a program that can do what I want to do. So I went there. I got my acceptance letter. The first time I went was orientation. And I just knew I made the right decision from that point forward. And I do not regret that at all. Not at all. I love A&T.
You love A&T. It's Aggie Pride out here. So we're going to go through these freshmen, the freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior year. And we're going to go through line by line. We're not just going to breeze through it. Because see, listen, you a creator. So you can tell the story. All right. So I want to just go line by line, year by year. So tell us about your freshman year.
Freshman year was humbling. Freshman year, it felt like a joke to me just because I felt like I was in like the most elite like space in the world. And I felt like a fish out of water. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know if I was able to be myself, but I realized that all of my insecurities were coming from me and it wasn't coming from the people around me. And it was actually the opposite. I think I had Croy start up this interview. She was one of those people that kind of got me out of my comfort zone. Another friend of mine, Jerron Tate, James Thomas, the whole entire Aggie Night Live people. And that was the very first organization that I joined, which helped me solidify what I wanted to do. And so my freshman year was kind of the biggest lesson that I took away from it was that, like, you're supposed to be here, so I need you to start acting like it. And so once I kind of taught or learned that lesson, I really just locked in because, like, I knew that this was a place where I can improve. And so I just wanted to be the people that I looked up to when I stepped on campus, for sure. And so, yeah, but it was humbling. It was very humbling staying up in Cooper. I asked my mama for $5 just so I can go to Chick-fil-A, still not having enough, and many more that I still cannot say. But if you know, you know what happened. But yeah, no, that was a good year, freshman year for sure. Listen, okay, crazy. I like to say class of 22 is one of those. I feel like that was the last, like, old school, like, type of A&T, because, like, we didn't have the new CAF until my second semester. And, like, even the new student center, like, we still had the dome, which was just, like, my first semester, which was just, like, Pizza Hut, Chick-fil-A, I think it was something else. And it was, like, this small building, but it was such a vibe that, like, we just loved to go there. And once that new CAF came, I loved it because it was right next to my dorm and I didn't have to walk to Southside anymore. So that was good for me. But yeah, we were spoiled. We were spoiled. I can't lie. We were spoiled. We were, like, I'm not going to lie. I felt the shit. I felt it. It was okay.
Listen, y'all definitely were spoiled. Y'all had a pizza hut on campus. Y'all, like, the new camp started, like, the second semester. Hey, left?
I don't know why. T was just like, yeah, no, we dropping it. Like, we just stick it to the Chick-fil-A. And I'm like, okay, that's cute. But, like, what if I want a cheap little pizza, like, on the side? I don't know, but it's cool.
Listen, they said we can't give them too much. Like, God,
literally, like, this is still an HBCU. Like, I need you to come on. Let's be honest.
Listen, A&T got the whole world. Y'all got folks on The Voice. Y'all got folks Oscar nominated. We can't give them Pizza Hut too. Like, they got to work for that.
We work hard for that. Fun fact, though, shout out to Vic. We were actually ASLs together, so I thought that was really cool. That shout out to my NSP family. It's a lot of stars, a lot of amazing people. I just had to shout that out. I just had to say that real quick.
For sure. So let's talk about that. So I know for me, so you got to add your Aggie success leader. That's like the freshman orientation leader. And they call it different things on other HBCU campuses. At Clark Atlanta, they call them OGs, orientation guys. At Fort Valley, we're just orientation leaders. We try to do a soul thing, but y'all got all the cool names. Y'all got that taken up. All right. So I started that my sophomore year. And I know that for me, being an orientation leader really changed my experience at Fort Valley, because it gave me a different perspective where I wasn't just a student for myself. I was a student leader in a different way, where I was responsible, one of the 25, 30, 40 students that were upperclassmen that was chosen to lead 500, 600 freshmen and have them come in and learn about the tradition of the institution from me and my other orientation leaders. So when did you start and become an orientation leader?
Oh my gosh. So we started the application process, if I'm not mistaken, like early October. And so we had a different set of interviews, and I didn't even know I was an orientation leader until January, because they invited me to go to the orientation convention. I think the last one was in Coastal Carolina. And so I went with the team, and the team still wasn't complete yet. And that was the crazy part, but I knew I had my job. I knew I was good. But I'm so glad you said that, because that burden of being a good, not only a good guide for the new freshmen, but just being a good representation of the university. And I felt like that was a challenge for me. Because on paper, low key, you take all the accolades and all the stuff that I accomplished on A&T, in my opinion, I don't felt like I was the stereotypical face of a school. I was a little reckless. I'll miss a class or two. I wasn't like, I knew I could do good, but if I know I'm good, I'll kind of be lazy a little bit. But and so I kind of had to snap out of that a little bit and just be like, I had to remind myself I needed to be the person that I needed when I was a freshman and that I got when I was a freshman. So I was kind of blessed with that. And being an ASL leader, that actually kind of helped me, in my opinion, because it gave me opportunities to connect more. One of my film people that I I'm still friends with, so close to this day. We actually went to the NAACP brunch yesterday. She was a freshman when I was an orientation leader, and they was like, oh my gosh, JB does film. And she was like, ah. And so we kind of linked up. Shout out to Kamaya Walker for sure. But it was a good practice, in my opinion. It was amazing practice because it taught me how to connect well. It taught me how to put my best foot forward. And most importantly, it taught me to think of others that could be inspired or make them see themselves. Because it goes back to when I was looking up A&T as a whole, and I saw Tarish Day, and he was an alum. And me seeing that, okay, it's achievable. It's all about repeating that. Looking back at it now, I was a good resemble. I should have never thought that I wasn't a good example of being a leader at the campus, because that's just blasphemy, because I wouldn't have gotten the job if I wasn't a good leader for that. But yeah, that was, yeah.
I love that. And I think that the big thing when it comes to being an orientation leader is really the fact that you don't have to be perfect, because you have some folks that come into these positions and they try to be perfect. And the thing that the freshmen like about us is that we're not perfect. We give them the real, like we go through our experiences, because I know for me, I was different as orientation leader because I didn't drink, I didn't smoke, I didn't party, but I was still cool in some capacity. They were like, what? He's still cool. He's still successful. That's wild. It was hard to conceptualize that, but I was like, this is the different side of it, because you don't have to be like that. You don't got to be out there being something that you're not. You can sort of still be outside, be on the campus and do your thing. So what you said is so important, because you don't got to be outside of yourself to really lead these freshmen and show them the way. So I think that's amazing. But you talked about this in your freshman year. You talked about Aggie Night Live. So that's like an offshoot, a Saturday Night Live. You talked about that being a big part of your freshman experience. So tell us a little bit about that.
Oh my gosh, I cannot wait to talk about Aggie Night Live. Aggie Night Live is a student-run organization that basically creates like live shows for the school. When I was there, we did it my freshman year. It was kind of the first, if I'm not mistaken, it was the first year where we did a show in fall and spring semester. And so that was amazingly fun. Like, insanely fun. My first show, I was just an actor, and so all I had to do was act and on one skit, and I was perfectly okay with it. But the reception that I got from the crowd, from the audience, I put it like this, that was confirmation. I think, in my opinion, that was the confirmation that, like, okay, I need to like still dedicate my life to not dedicate my life, but really continue on this path, because I'm good at it. But the more important thing is I love it. Because you could be good at something, but it's not like your journey. Or you could be passionate about it, but that still may not be your journey. But that was like one of those moments where it just connected. And sophomore year came, let me not skip too ahead, but freshman year was just the base of it. I learned how to direct the first time. I was a horrible director my first time. And I wrote my first script. That was a horrible script too. A horrible script. But it got me to create and practice. And I think as a creative, it is very important to practice. You can't call yourself a writer if you're not writing. You can't call yourself a director if you're not directing. And it doesn't have to be a $20 million film. Like the director, Gareth Edwards, he directed The Creator, but he didn't do that. That wasn't his first movie. So you have to start somewhere, and you have to learn, and you have to constantly work at it and be willing to improve. You can't just do it and think you're the best at it. You could think you're the best at it, but always know that there's room for growth. And I think that's what that first year at Aggie Night Live taught me for sure.
So let's talk about your sophomore year. So I know that when it's sophomore year, you sort of get into the flow of what college life is, and you're not really all the way there with it, but you have a broader understanding of it and how to navigate it. So what was sophomore year like for you?
It's crazy because it was the exact opposite for me my sophomore year. Like, my sophomore year was a lot of fails, a lot of humbling things. And I think it's because I had that mindset of, oh yeah, I got it. I'm good. I learned everything I needed to learn my freshman year, so I'm good. And so my sophomore year was my first attempt at making POV, was a web series that I did in college. And it was horrible. Like, I couldn't format a script right. I wasn't thinking about the time it would take of filming, because Aggie Night Live it's live, but then like the things that we do online or like the video sketches are like 4 to 5 minutes. So I'm thinking like, oh, it's going to be like that. But no, like it wasn't like that. And then I kind of cast it to many people and I wasn't as, I think I didn't know all of the materials I needed to kind of grow, to kind of make it the show that it was. But yeah, that was very much humbling. But I think I tell you what made sophomore year so special to me was Mr. Moye, who is works in Crosby, and he was one of the biggest inspirations that time. I was a work study student, and so I picked to work in the TV studio on campus, and he took me under his wing and he told me that you gotta fail. It's okay if you fail. Trust me. It's kind of learning from your failures and kind of improving on those things that really motivated me to do good. And I'm really grateful for that. I'm really grateful for him. And just Crosby, like Crosby really came through for me my sophomore year. I love the lessons that I learned. To one of my favorite professors, Professor Page, who is another Aggie alum, has two amazing short movies and an animation short film that he did as well. And he was the one that kind of got me to learn my mistakes. He's the one that got me to learn about camera movement and, you know, different aspect ratios and ways to kind of make a shot better and how lighting is a big like thing when you're telling a story, and got me to realize all these things that I realized I wasn't putting in that POV project. And so that's where I have to really just apply like my school, because like the things that made me better were things that I've learned in class. And I would say for a lesson for all the students that are watching it and or wanting to do my path or whatever, it's please go to class and learn, but don't just leave the things that you learn in class. You got to take that thing outside of it and put it in your own projects and your own day-to-day life, because it will really take you farther in ways that you can't imagine. And so that's what that sophomore year was to me. And then COVID hit, which was so bad. It was so blue. Like, oh my gosh, like 0 out of 10. We're not recommend. Just horrible. But I think that's the way of God kind of working out, or God has a funny way of working things out. My first attempt at POV was a bust, but COVID happened anyway. So even if it was good, I wouldn't be able to film it anyway. So yeah, that was my sophomore year in the GIFs.
So I think you just hit on a very interesting point. That's even something that I didn't have to deal with, because I graduated December 2019. So I dealt with COVID from the vantage point of a new graduate, and a lot of what I was doing with HBCU Pulse and with other obligations. I actually visited A&T before the pandemic, and a lot of that halted, but you were in school. You had multiple years left. So what was that COVID experience like for you? Tell us about sort of learning about it, moving out, and then sort of dealing with it when you came back, because that's been now, as we record this, not to date the interview, but it's been 4 years ago. So now we're looking at it like, yo, 4 years ago, that was crazy. So now it's like almost a relic of history. Like, I want to hear your retelling of what it was like in COVID as a college student.
COVID was, once again, I felt like it was rare for me, because I actually got my own apartment on like my sophomore year. So I didn't have to leave Greensboro. I didn't want to leave Greensboro anyways, because I developed a life there. And I knew that if I was to go back to Charleston, I wouldn't be as focused as I was now, or as I was back then. And it was hard. I will say that it was very hard, because bills had to be paid, but then also school. And so on top of me being a student, I was working two other jobs. Like, I was working at Food Lion. I was also had a job for Walmart for about a month until I quit for whatever reason. And on top of that, still trying to maintain my grades and still trying to learn. But I was worried about my family. I lost two family members during COVID. And those were two family members that I remember just like driving down the street, seeing, talking to them, and having them like just put love into me. And so that was hard too. But I'm the type of person where I am, shout out to my mom, because she kind of forced me to look at the bright things of things and take COVID aside. And because that, I don't want to take away how bad and severe COVID was. I think the only good thing I think about during that time was me just perfecting my craft. In the midst of COVID, I gained a mentor that made my writing stronger, and who I still talk to this day, and who has done amazing things and is an amazing executive producer. And so I'm appreciative of that, but I cannot lie. It was very difficult, and it was tiring too. It was tiring. It was very tiring because I'm just not used. I wasn't used to it. Nobody was used to that. I'm used to being in class and learning. I'm used to being out on the field and writing. Even with Aggie Live, we couldn't do anything with Aggie Live. We couldn't film. We couldn't do anything. One of our other shows was canceled for the spring because of it. And it was a show that I was looking forward to. So it was a lot of losses in that. But at the same time, I just had to look at the long game. I wanted to give up, but I couldn't. And so that was just me reassuring myself that things will get better. Hopefully this will pass. That was just the mindset that I had to develop, seriously.
Right. So you came in to North Carolina A&T fall 2018. So you had your freshman year, no COVID. You had the start of your sophomore year. You got a chance to experience homecoming. You got a chance to experience what life was like that freshman year, sophomore year, being an Aggie success leader before COVID. Then 2020 happens, that second semester, and then you come into the new year in a new society for college, a new lifestyle for college students that I think extends on into when you graduate in 2022. So tell us about the differences you saw from life before COVID and life after COVID.
Oh my gosh. I think the environment on campus was different. I'm not going to hold you. I felt like my freshman year, that first semester, fall 2018, it felt like a movie, like in my opinion, like a genuine movie, because people were not afraid to talk to others. It was a community where we wasn't afraid to showcase our pride in our school. And like, also just, I feel like the sense of community was a lot stronger. I mean, I'm not going to hold you, but compared to after COVID, like I'm thinking about my last semester there on A&T, I felt generally that because the kids, I hate saying kids, but because the new students, I would say, didn't have the group me's, didn't have the moments where we would sneak into McCain or like a Barbie and they're like a mini kickback with all our friends and have that vibe. I did sense a lot more kids feeling isolated and feeling alone and having a hard time finding friends or having a hard time finding their group. And when you're forced to be quarantined or forced to be separated by everybody for a year or two, it would be more difficult to kind of have that. So I completely understand that effect of it. I don't know how A&T is now because obviously I haven't been there in a minute, but I do pray that that community sense is coming back together, because I felt like that's what made A&T so special for me. I mean, it didn't matter if you was in web, it didn't matter if you was an engineer student, it didn't even matter if you was Crosby or the building across from Crosby, right? Martina, like it didn't matter. Like we knew somebody and we was always looking out for each other. And I think because we were forced to be separated, I did feel that sense of isolation with everybody. But that was just me. It could have just been a me thing, but I don't know.
I don't think it was just you. I think that's something that when we talk to students that were a part of that experience, of course, me, I graduated the semester before, so I had a lot of folks that I knew that were in leadership positions that expected to lead in a COVID-less world where, hey, I am now SGA president. I'm now Greek. I'm now this and that. And I'm going to get a chance to be on the yard and not have this deadly pandemic affect life as I know it. And that's something that was depressing. That's something that got to them and that they had to adjust to. And some students say that at that time, that were in school at that time, there's some students that say that were still in school at that time, that they're still adjusting to it. So I don't think it was just your experience. I think that your experience is unique, and I appreciate you sharing that. But let's talk about senior year, because senior year 2022, senior year normally is either two things. This is either really fun, really, really lit, or it's, I gotta go, I gotta get this job, I gotta get this internship. So what was senior year like for you?
It was both. I can't lie. It was both. I understood that senior year was like, I knew that senior year was going to be the last year where life wasn't going to be as serious, right? And COVID was still on the thing. So I was still very cautious about that. And so I was still very careful, even though there was some lifted some of the rules surrounding COVID. So I was very still cautious about that. But just if it matched those guidelines, I was there. I was out here having fun. Like I was just going to enjoy it because I knew what God had for me. And I knew that I knew it was going to be a minute till I was going to be back on the East Coast. I just knew it. But then also I kind of caught myself halfway being like, all right, you gotta let this go. Like, you gotta go. And I'm horrible with change. Like, I'm terrified of change. I don't like it. It's not my favorite thing in the world, but I knew this was a change that I just had to get accept. And so I caught myself having a hard time accepting it. But once I accepted it, ironically enough, that's when I started hearing internships and opportunities started arising. When I got, it was, I think it was like the last week of April, and I graduated 2 days after my birthday, but it was like the last week of April, and Disney hit me up and they was just like, yeah, we want you to come to LA and work with us. And I was just like, oh, okay. All right. I guess I have no choice. I will be there. Get into the money. Let's do it. Like, let's do it all. I'm going to do it. But I did cry just because I was like, oh crap. Like, I'm going to be away from everybody and I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. But that was until I realized that my friend that I met as an orientation leader, she told me she also had an internship at Disney. So I was just like, thank God I'm not going to be alone. And so that was like my saving grace. But it was a both. It was definitely both, because I knew that once I got to the real world, as people say, things wasn't going to be the same. But I also knew that it was time for me to go. And despite me fighting and staying and being like, oh, man, let me get another semester in, I was like, no. My friend said no. My mama said no. I said no. Like, it was just time to go. But yeah.
Yeah. And for me, I honestly thought about it myself. I'm like, should I structure my classes where maybe I can be in college in the spring and then COVID? So I guess I made the right decision, just getting it done. Okay, get it.
Oh my gosh. That's like more money. Now you're the old person on camp. Like, no shade to anybody, because listen, because school is hard. And so if you got to stay an extra year or two or three, I get it. Trust me. I get it. But now you're the old geezer at a party and you like, I don't know nobody. And I just didn't want that for me. I didn't.
Hey, listen, when it's time to go, it's time to go. And that's the big thing, where it's like a lot of folks, when you graduate, you don't really know what's next. And I think that's something that follows us when we get to this age. Like, I'm 27 and got the business thing going, all this different stuff. But personally, sometimes I don't know what's next or where things are going. And I think that's something that we all go through at a certain age, around the time after we graduate college. But you really started to work and started to grind. So before we talk about the creator, I want to talk about HBCUs in LA, because that's one of the signature programs in HBCU life. And actually last year I spoke with Miss Stacy Milner, who, you know, she's over HBCUs in LA.
What? I love Miss Stacy. I was just talking to her Friday, and she was congratulating me and kind of helping me. And I say this, HBCU in LA is one of those programs where they say what they are. And one of the best things and most beautiful things about that program is how they don't just give you an internship and they leave you alone. They keep up with you. And I mean, they still give us opportunities. They still post job offerings for us. They're still very adamant about making sure that we're staying connected with each other, because Issa Rae said an amazing quote that it's not about networking up, it's networking across. And HBCU in LA is a true embodiment of that. You know what I mean? If it wasn't for my connections at HBCU in LA, I wouldn't have been at the brunch learning and listening to amazing people that's in the industry talking. Same thing with some of the jobs that I got after the creator. I wouldn't have gotten it without HBCU in LA. And I cannot stress how good of an organization that is, because I think the most important thing that HBCU in LA teaches us is our worth. I work in the entertainment industry, and the entertainment industry is brutal. I can't stress that enough. There's going to be some people that will question your worth and question your work ethic. They will look at your resume and all your accomplishments and they'll spit on it. And I think what made HBCU in LA was so beautiful is they told us, or they encourage us, to, you can't let a job, or you can't let somebody who doesn't even know you question your worth or question like what you're destined for. And if it wasn't for those type of people in my corner, I would not be here, generally, honestly, 100%. And it bridges that gap of that disadvantage that we have at HBCU students, because this Hollywood still has a lot of growing to do as far as being diverse and listening to everybody's story. And it's not just us, it's the Latino community, it's the Asian community, it's the LGBTQ community. Like, all of us are very underrepresented in this industry. And I feel like HBCU in LA noticed that and is kind of helping us. That's our connection. That's our way in. And especially if you do good in the program, like, you're golden. So I love HBCU in LA. I love Miss Milner. I love Leonard. I love Mr. Ted, her husband, and Christine and Bree, like the whole team, like, they're amazing. And what they're doing is God's work, literally, like, absolutely 100%.
I love that. So you said something interesting, that without HBCUs in LA, you wouldn't have gotten to the creator. So I want to talk about the creator and just that opportunity of working on that project, which we got to mention once again, was nominated in 2 Oscar categories. I just wanted to say that again, because that's very important. So how did you get that opportunity? So we know HBCUs in LA laid the foundation, but you talked about it actually deeper in an article that North Carolina A&T released about you around the time of the Oscars. So tell us about the process of working on the creator.
Okay, so how I got the creator was, I was an internship at Disney. I was a Disney's digital studio service intern. And those are people on the caterer side that kind of main goal is selling post-production spaces, making sure that all their clients get what they need and everything of that sort, and plenty of other things. I'm just literally shortening it down. But my supervisor, Miss Shannon, who I love, like, she is the GOAT. Like, Miss Shannon Wynn, if you're watching this, like, you're amazing. I love you. She looked at me one day and she was just like, "You need a job." And I was like, "Thank you for realizing that." And the next day she was just like, "I'm going to sell this space to this team of editors and director. I need you to look up Gareth Edwards. I need you to look up Hank Corwin. I need you to look up Scott Morris. I need you to look them up, and I need you to be on your, like, P's and Q's, so that way that you..." And so I'm like, "Okay, cool." I looked them up. I reported back to her. She was like, "Cool." We went there at the Fox studio and I saw the team. I was just like, "Hey," didn't think nothing of it. Went away with my life. Didn't think of it. 2 weeks later, I got a call from, I got a text or email from Shannon. She was just like, "The creator's looking for a post PA. I put your name in. You have an interview. Be ready." I'm like, "Oh, okay." Interview was just 15 minutes. The next day I got the job. And shocked, I was like, "Oh," like, "now I got to find an apartment. Now I got to live here. Got to pay LA bills." That is not happy. I was happy, but I was ecstatic because that was my official foot in that door. And I mean, that was my way in. And also, tidbit, I did send a thank you email to the people that I was interviewing, who happened to be my supervisor on that team. "Please, students, if you are applying for jobs and you just finished an interview, send in that thank you email, because 2 times now that has landed me jobs. Get on that and stay consistent with that." And my time on the creator was a challenge just because it was completely new for me. A lot of people on the team kind of started off small and went their way onto big budget films. This was like my first movie, my first big budget film, my first like main like box office feature film. And so I was struggling. Like, I was like hanging by a thread a lot of times, but I had to learn, I had to tap in, I had to lock in. I remember having a talk with my supervisor, Sarah. Shout out to Sarah Russell. She's amazing. She's a beast too, and very cool. And like, she kind of gave me important tips to kind of do better, and I did better. I'll never forget this. I remember I just like asked her about something. She was like, "Oh, I forgot about that, but I'm gonna hit you up later about it." And I remember I had to drop her off somewhere. She was just like, "You're improving, actually, like, way, like, really good improving. And I need you to know that you're doing a great job, and I need you to keep doing it because you're good. Like, you got it." And I was just like, to me, I'm not gonna curse, forget the Oscar nomination. That was my win, because Sarah was one of the hardest working, she was the hardest working person, in my opinion, on that movie. And now there was days when she would leave at 4 o'clock in the morning and then come back 10 o'clock in the morning and do it again. And just that thumbs up from the team and them supporting me, like they inspired me to drop songs just for fun and actually love my songs and was really rocking with it. And I say all that just to say, and they introduced me to more people to help me, because my big goal is to be a writer. I'm accepting any offers right now, but my big goal is to be a writer, and they kind of nudged me in those directions as well and got me in room and spaces with those people. And so I say that all to say is that the fact that they told me that I did a good job, the fact that they told me to keep going, and the fact that they are still interested in my career going forward, that puts a smile on my face, because that lets me know that, okay, you survived it. Now let's do it again. That's kind of my goal. And so I love that opportunity. I love that. I love the checks. I'm just kidding. I loved it all. And yeah, I'm really appreciative of that experience 100%.
So I got to ask you this, because when it comes to the Oscar nomination, for real, like 2 Oscar nominations, Best Sound and Visual Effects at the 96 Academy Awards. So how did your role, so you were a post-production assistant. So I want you to walk us through what that role means to a film project for folks that don't know, and also how that role contributed to the nomination at the Academy Awards.
So post PA is entry level. So if you hear PA, that's an entry level position in the film industry. So it's basically everything that the team does not have time to do, that's where you stepped in, right? So if you have to send an email, right? If you have, we had a lot of screenings for this movie. And so I would have to send emails to every single guest, get NDAs from every single guest, check in every single guest, make sure that they're good, make sure they have the map of the screening, all that stuff. And that was like, and that was just like a light thing that we did, right? Sometimes it's something as small as, yo, can you pick this up for us? And I'm like, okay, I'll do it. Making sure that I'm turning in all the receipts and all the financial things that we spend on for the week to the company, you know, and to make sure that everything is accredited for. Sometimes this wasn't in the job description, but making sure people are smiling, like making sure that like they're okay, making sure that they're good, and making sure that despite how tired and exhausted they are, that they still feel celebrated. All that is important. And so it's a lot of work. It's sometimes you feel like you can do more. And I caught myself feeling like I could do more a lot. But talking to the team, they told me that, yo, we all was in your shoes, and we all think it sucks. We all think it's horrible, but you are doing a good job at it, and you're putting a smile on my face. And I'm gonna be honest, I don't think I contributed to the Oscar. I honestly don't. But everybody and their mama is telling me no, and that no, because it goes back to that putting a smile on their faces and letting them know that they're still doing it and all that stuff. And also, I technically am a part of the team, so I don't have, whether I like it or not, I'm a part of it. So I got to suck it up and deal with it. So I guess I need to stop being humble, I guess. But that's kind of my viewpoint of it.
I think you contributed a lot to it. I mean, just like you, what you just said that you contributed to it. Like I didn't really contribute to it. I just stood around and just watched them just put together stuff and watched. I just made them smile. No, you're not SpongeBob. Like, what the world? You was thinking SpongeBob. No. Like, you played a part. Like, what the world? I just made them smile. You know, that's what I just did one thing. No, you don't
say. I was just a token Negro, if we being honest. Like, no. I was just there.
I feel like you did. Yeah, you broke that down and explained it. I personally feel like, just for me, you did way more. Because some people be like, no, if you made people smile, you did something. No, they paid you for some reason. Because you were walking around making a smile, they would have said, listen, there's a comedy club like downtown. Okay. Go make a laugh over there. Go make a smile over there.
I'm going to show them this exact part. Like, I'm going to show this to the team. And they're going to eat this up. They're going to be like, we tried to tell you. I don't know what you want. JB, I need you to lock in. Making me mad. All that stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I call me crazy, call me stupid. But I can't wait for the day when it's a movie that I wrote, or a movie that I directed, or a movie that I'm starring in. I guess until I get there, I'm trying to not make this as, oh yeah, this is it. This is my win. But I think also at the same time, I need to start, and what I'm starting to do, because it's a progress, it's a process. I'm understanding that this is a huge deal. No matter how much I try to minimize my role, no matter how much I try to downplay it, like the fact that I was a part of a 2-time Oscar nominated movie. And it wasn't that I was an extra, like I was working on the teams that were nominated. And because I was a part of that team, I'm a part of it by association. And so the fact that that was my first movie. I was literally a month out of college. Literally, that is unheard of for not even just HBCUs, just period. But I mean, usually people that go to NYU or UCLA, those big film schools get roles like that. And like, not a boy from Charleston, South Carolina, who went to Greensboro, North Carolina to get his bachelor's degree. So I realized that it's a big deal. And how, like, my hometown, like, I'm from Charleston, and I'm not gonna hold you, like, South Carolina, Charleston is a beautiful city. I love my community in Charleston, but we live in a state where people don't expect us to dream big, and people don't expect us to accomplish those dreams. And so we face a lot of white discrimination, and it doesn't stop, it doesn't end. And to see my city reception of that, I realized, okay, this is for them. And this will always be for them. And I think what I can't wait the most is I can't wait when I fully give back and set up a program like HBCU in LA and Charleston. So that way those kids from Burke High School or kids that go to Garrett, I don't even think Garrett is open no more, but those kids that go to Burke High School, those kids at A&T, like they have someone that's looking out for them. And that's what this whole thing was. It was a reminder of that. And it's a reason, it was one of the main reasons why I wanted to do it. And me accomplishing that and giving motivation to people, and like one day, because it's going to happen, the tongue is a very powerful thing. My tongue is very powerful. I don't know why, but that's just a gift God gave me. Like, it's going to, those projects are going to happen soon. May not be a year, may not be 5 years, may not even be 10, but it will be placed in. I can't wait to be a part of those. So that's what I'm appreciative of, for sure.
I think that's real. And we're going to talk about what you have coming up. But I think that just that feeling of, hey, like I was a part of this, but was I really a part of it? I think that's something that we deal with now, when it's like, hey, can I really celebrate this? Am I allowed to celebrate this? Well, it's like, I mean, it's something that in the grand scheme of it, like, you literally did something that doesn't happen from HBCU. You said NYU and these other bigger non-HBCU students get that opportunity. And from North Carolina A&T, like the largest HBCU in the nation, you made that happen. For sure, yeah. But I want to say that's something that we all go through, because I go through it. There's other folks that go through it. That's just the nature of how our minds operate, where it's, you sort of want that level of validation of, hey, am I doing the right thing? Am I walking the right way? Is this something that I really can take a stake in and take a claim in? Because I know for me, when it came to my election consulting, me working with different kings and queens and SGA presidents around the nation, helping them build their campaigns, like, I was like, did I really win those elections because it's me, or because they were already popping anyway? And it's, they had to win a pageant, and I helped them for the pageant. But what helped me was, like, how you said, you want to see your own thing. I had one client, Jada Jenkins. Like, we worked for that. And she got, and I'm like, you know what? Maybe I do play a part in this. Like, maybe it's something that I am a part of. And it actualized every other element of the work that I did. So I think that's something that's important as we move into that next chapter for you, because I think that you're going to get that real soon, because you're already working. You're going to be like, I mean, I did this documentary, you know, about voting. So, I mean, I must be pretty fine. So it might be Oscar nominated too next year. Who knows? Like, at this point, let's talk about what's next for you, because 2024 is an election year. All right. It's a lot of scary stuff going on in the world. And you said, what? I was just on The Creator, and now I'm going to be the creator of a documentary about voting. Okay. So tell us about that. Tell us about your project coming up that's really pivotal to what's going on this year.
Oh my gosh, I'm working with Miss Becca Finley, who actually gave me my first creative opportunity in Charleston, which is a full circle moment in her new nonprofit organization on releasing a documentary project about kind of young voters and the importance of voting. It is part-time for me, but I am serving as a writer on it. And so I love the project because it's like what you said, not only are we in an election year, but it's a lot of crazy things that are going on right now. And I feel like I think this country does a good job of kind of minimalizing other form of elections and only focusing on the president when a lot of the laws and things that we really want to fight for start in House of Representatives, the Senate, like all these other different aspects of the government that a lot of young people do not know. And we're really pushing for young voters because I think my generation, we have a lot of beautiful ideas. And I do believe that we've experienced a lot at a young age. We normalized school shootings. We've seen women's rights get taken away. We're seeing Black kids get denied for schools and opportunities based on the texture and stylings of hair. And so I feel like we need to really do our part in this because we're backtracking as a country. If we're so-called the best country in the nation, then our laws should resemble that. And I don't think they're doing that right now. And so I really love this project. I really wanted to encourage us to vote. And I'm really excited for it. I'm really excited for the final product. And yeah, I love that. I love it a lot, for sure.
I think that's very important because a lot of times voting is minimalized. And I think that a lot of our issues we go through and that we confront and that we're upset about is because of a lack of understanding of the system. It's not even a lack of understanding that goes to, oh, this is why it's not being done, but this is how it is done. How to codify a law, like how to make sure things pass in the House and the Senate, how to actually advocate, how to make it where, hey, like the gubernatorial race matters, like your mayor matters, your local representatives matters. That's something
matter because that's where it starts.
That's where it starts because it starts at ground zero from there. You're like the governor has way more sway than the president on your daily, everyday life, although those federal laws supersede those state laws. But I think that's the part that we have to understand. And I think that another thing too, we got to understand as HBCU folks, is that the term HBCU is because of a law that passed under Lyndon Baines Johnson, the Higher Education Act of 1965. Your FAFSA, all this financial aid, all this different stuff, Higher Education Act of 1965. That is a law that was passed when Lyndon Baines Johnson had a super majority, which probably won't happen again no time soon because of the way we are as a country now. We're very divided right now. But that's something that happened back then. So politics matters. If you are turning up at North Carolina A&T's homecoming, if you have Fort Valley's homecoming, you better thank politics because an HBCU would not exist, nor the funds that are sometimes doesn't go to our institutions, like in North Carolina A&T and Fort Valley. So just saying, we got to talk about that too. But still, that's something that's a political act. So I think what you're doing is very important when it comes to that. And I appreciate you taking on that responsibility, especially in a year such as this in 2024. It's a lot on the line that folks don't even understand because they're thinking about one race. It's across the board a lot that's on the line. Listen, Jordan, amazing interview, man. Really proud of you for all the stuff that you're doing. So one last thing before we go, tell everyone where they can find you on social media.
Oh my gosh. On Instagram, you can find me on Drexel18. That's a weird name. I know. Shout out to Maya Washington for that name. But it's Drixle and then 1-8. And so that's how you can find me on Instagram. You can find me on LinkedIn at Jordan Brown. I got the Afro picture. And you can do that. I don't want to give y'all the Twitter. Twitter's kind of crazy. I don't be saying nothing for real. I just be mad at the world and just be all my activist stuff there sometimes. But yeah, no, that's where y'all can find me. Stream my EP, though. Give me some pointers on what I should do. It's called 512 by Drexel. Same name without the 18. Really would love for people to listen. It was my very first musical project, so I know I have room to grow, but I love that project. I think it's very cool. So, yeah.
Jordan, thank you for coming on. And listen, continue just to do your work, man, to spread your light and just really continue to grow your career. You put it on for North Carolina A&T. but you're also putting on for all HBCUs and everything that you do, man. So really appreciate you for coming on. You're listening to HBCU Pulse Radio.
Like what you hear?
Yeah.
Subscribe to HBCU Pulse Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, head to HBCUPulse.com to stay up to date on what's going on in the HBCU community. Thank you for listening to HBCU Pulse Radio.